Welcome, everybody, to another fascinating, thrilling episode of HomeKit Insider. You've got me, Andrew O'Hara, sitting with my co-pilot for the episode and the secret identity of D.B. Cooper, Stephen Robles. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I don't know the D.B. Cooper reference.
Well, that's fine. I probably shouldn't have said it because...
Oh, secret agent thing.
Yeah, sure. That's what it is.
Well, I'd like to point our listeners back to last week's episode for a moment. We did that special interview with Tim Booth, the brand manager of Eve, and we got a lot of nice comments on Twitter and elsewhere just saying it was a really fun interview, and it really helped people understand what Thread was, and it actually helped me understand it a little better, too. So, if you haven't listened to that one, it's the previous episode in the feed. You should definitely check it out. Tim Booth, and I pronounced his name correctly. And I want to keep mentioning that.
We can also put the link again in the show notes.
Yes.
But Eve put out a really nice blog post specifically talking HomeKit, Thread, and HomePod Mini and how it kind of all works together. They kind of mentioned it the last time it came out, like the same day as our podcast dropped. So maybe people missed it, but we'll put that again in show notes if you want to go read up on more Thread talk.
Yes, well, you'll see that link in the show notes. And this week, you know, it's kind of a quiet season for HomeKit product releases and news. Not much happened this past week, but Andrew has some stuff he could talk about of his equipment and experience. Then we're going to answer some listener questions. But this has been in the notes for several weeks. It's called Mac Pro Update. And I would love to know what that's about, Andrew.
Well, I'm pretty sure you put it in there. I'm pretty sure I mentioned my woes and you were just like, let's talk about that.
I'd love to hear it.
I don't know, man. I just had problems with this Mac Pro since I got it. You know, we got this thing at launch. And for people who remember, like a year ago, we had taken it in for some Bluetooth connectivity issues. I even had some people writing in with some issues that they had experienced on their own Mac Pros and how they were resolved that were very similar to what I was experiencing. And since then, the problems just have grown. I had issues with like displays would just go wonky and like flashing and stuff like that. And I've had a ton of just random shutdowns. Just literally I'm like working and all of a sudden the computer's off and boot back up. And it's like, we restarted because of problem and leaves it at that. We were like, okay, this is enough. Take this thing back in again. So we took it back in the Apple store and they've had it. And the first thing just with the Bluetooth, they came back and said, well, technically, we couldn't get it to replicate with just a mouse and a keyboard attached. When we got like five or so devices connected, then, man, it was terrible. It was really laggy. Like, you could barely use the mouse and the keyboard. Like, it was terrible. But as we were looking through documentation, it says the the limit on the Mac Pro is 7 Bluetooth devices, and you may experience lag with 5 to 6 devices. So technically, this thing is probably in spec. And I'm like, okay, well, one, I don't have 5 or 6 devices connected. And if you are connecting 5 devices, like he's like, oh, I had a mouse and a keyboard and my headphones and I added like an extra keyboard or something. And then it started lagging. I'm like, that seems ridiculous that that's already showing problems.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I got my laptop here and I'll connect multiple things to it. I've never had stuff like that happen. So the fact that it's like 5 and it's showing problems is that seems to me like it's a problem on its own. But aside from that, so their plan was they wanted to send it back to us. They wanted to like, okay, well, why don't we take it back to you and you try it again. And when you run into issues, we'll have you like capture data and send it in to the engineers in Cupertino and they'll see if they can find any other problems with it. And I don't know. That just putting it back into our laps of having issues with it and going through it again is just not something that I was like super excited about. So I asked them to look into it again, see what else they could do. And they had it for the past like week, and it's been radio silence. The last we heard from them was like last Friday or something, and we're coming up on a week, and they haven't reached out yet. So I don't really know where the state of the computer is. It's still not fixed. And for anyone who is wondering, because I'm sure there's like 80 of you out there who are the first question to ask, did we try reinstalling the OS, make sure it's not software related? Yeah, we did. I have reinstalled that thing like to hack and back. Like I've restored it back to factory and then did a like restore from backup and have also reset to factory, like completely restored the OS, wiped everything, and then transferred everything manually, like literally just reinstalled things one by one and tried it that way. And like some of the Bluetooth lag issues, those happen when we're in like safe mode or like, you know, the safe boot mode or recovery mode, like literally the recovery mode menu, that's a completely separate partition and that is still doing it. And I'll have it happen in a studio with literally just like, you know, two or three devices connected, like a set of headphones and a mouse and keyboard, and it starts happening. And it's just beyond frustrating, especially when I, doing what we do here, I have, you know, a litany of different Macs in the studio that we're able to rely on for stuff. And I've got, you know, a 2016 MacBook Pro here that I'm recording on today. I've got, you know, M1 MacBook Airs. I've got, you know, a closet full of different Macs, and I've never experienced any of these issues with any of those other machines. So for them to say that this is spec and, you know, that they're not sure if they can do anything, it's just really frustrating, especially on literally the most expensive machine that I own. So we're nowhere, really. Wow. I've got no updates, and I'm just kind of getting frustrated with what's going on.
So currently, is it in their possession or yours?
It is in their possession. When I called back into them asking them to investigate more was like last Friday, and I talked to their admin, not one of the genius technicians. I talked to an admin and asked him, because they couldn't put me in touch with a genius. They would just put me in touch with the admin after spending like 45 minutes getting routed through their phone channels. And I finally got in touch with someone at the store, and their admin was going to relay my messages to the genius, and they would get back to me. But that was about a week ago.
That's unfortunate, because I actually have a MacBook Air that I'm needing to get repaired as well. But with the whole COVID stuff and Genius Bar issues, like, I don't know, it seems like their technical support has been a little lacking in the last several months, and I just have avoided going in at all because I don't want to deal with it. But man, that's unfortunate, especially, yeah, like you said, with the most expensive Mac. And I think this is just a lesson that you should only buy Apple Silicon Macs now. Doesn't help you, but
this is actually what's actually happening right now is Tim's prophecy coming true, and I'm gonna be like, oh no, my Mac Pro is destroyed, and I now need to buy a new Apple Silicon Mac Pro when they announce.
Yeah, that's
because I have these Bluetooth lag issues. That's what's gonna happen. That's not gonna happen, everyone.
No. You know, let me ask you this too. Speaking about Bluetooth issues with devices, I know this is not HomeKit related, but you know, we're the HomeKit guys, so you know, it's us. Your AirPods Max. Have you been using them often? A, that's the first question. And the second question is, do you have like initial connection issues ever where it either takes a long time to connect them to a Mac specifically, or if there's like intermittent connection issues here and there? Do you ever experience that? And do you use them?
Yes, I use them pretty frequently. No, I have not had any connection issues except for when they were connected to my Mac Pro and I had random cutting out, and it was fun because I was pretty sure I was in the middle of like a podcast or an interview or something when that was happening, and I was like missing questions and stuff like that, so it's cool. But yeah, that was only on that Mac Pro, and any other machine I've never had any issues like that on.
So you've used the AirPods Max with an M1 MacBook and it's worked all right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. Yeah, mine, if they connect, they're usually good, like for the most part, but sometimes they just take forever to connect. I actually started using the Apple undergarment case inside the Waterfield case because I found the Waterfield case didn't put them to sleep as consistently as the undergarment case, Apple's bra or whatever. So I've been using the thing in the Waterfield case, but sometimes like I'll take them out, I'll hear like a bing when I put them on my head, like they're on and they're trying to connect. But sometimes I'll go up to Control Center, go to Sound, and select the AirPods Max, and it'll just spin and won't connect. And the other day, I think it was yesterday, I was trying to use them, and I just got tired of trying to turn them off, turn them back on, put them back in the case, take them out. So I just left them on my head to see if and when they would connect. And it was about a full 10 minutes. They finally, like, made the sound again and actually connected, and I could actually, like, listen to a podcast from my Mac. So I don't know. I'm curious, listeners, if you have issues, if you have an AirPods Max, and if you have an issue like that, I don't know. Mine's still doing that. And I'm on the latest Big Sur update, which was supposed to fix all that Bluetooth stuff. So I don't know. That's just me. Well, I wanted to touch on, I actually forgot to put this in the notes, but I had a power outage at my home the other day. And it's actually kind of nice when you have a bunch of smart home devices, because if you're away from home, you can tell there's a power outage, and then you can tell when the power comes back on, because you get like all these notifications about cameras back online, and now you can see this again and that again. But there was a power outage, and when the electricity came back on, all my Homebridge stuff didn't connect. Now, I have Homebridge running on a Mac Mini now, and we've talked about Homebridge in the past. It allows you to connect non-HomeKit devices to HomeKit. So like I have my Vivint security system connected that way, a couple Wemo switches. But the Mac Mini started back up, but it was not, talking to Homebridge or something. So I actually had to jump in, and there were apparently a bunch of updates. And this is one of the things with Homebridge, like unless you regularly check your Homebridge like admin screen or that dashboard, there could be updates to the plugins or updates to Homebridge, and you'll never know unless you check it. So there were some updates, and I did that, but I had to restart the computer once or twice, and they finally got connected. But to be wary of those who use Homebridge and such, it is not 100% reliable. Do you ever find that to be true? Do you have to like kick your Homebridge device to make sure it's working again, or after a power outage or anything like that?
Yeah, I've definitely had problems with it. It's kind of the reason why, like, I don't want to, like, disparage, you know, Homebridge or anything like that, because there are a lot of really nice uses for it, and I really liked being able to connect, like, my Dyson fans through Homebridge. I have a couple, like, Dyson air purifiers slash fans and everything, and it's awesome being able to connect those and control those through HomeKit. And the problem that I had was it would, like, my hub would just kind of keep going offline. It was, so I would use a Raspberry Pi. So I don't know if it was a difference between running on a Raspberry Pi versus a Mac or anything like that, but it was just not staying online for me. And like whenever I'd need my, it wasn't like that often, but it would always seem to be, because I would only use it for those things. I did like this really early. If anyone remembers, like literally one of my first projects for Apple Insider was how to make your own HomeKit camera. Because at the time there was only like one thing on the market, like the D-Link Omna, right, which aside from being ridiculously hot and not all that intelligent, was fairly expensive at like $200-$300 or something. So I did this like little project of how you could use a Raspberry Pi in the camera and boom, 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 put it all together, run Homebridge and everything, and you can make your own HomeKit camera, and it was pretty cool. I was happy with it, and I actually used that as a secondary HomeKit camera for a long time. This is before HomeKit Secure Video and all those types of things, and I used it for that, and it was like reliable at first for like a good amount of time, like 3 months or so, and then it sort of just kept going offline, and I was also using that for my Dyson fans, and those would catch. Like, I'd go to control them, and they just wouldn't respond. And I'm like, what the heck? And it's like, your Raspberry Pi, Bridge is offline. And I'm like, why are you offline again? And I don't know if that was my Wi-Fi thing, that probably before I had mesh routers and everything like that. But I haven't fully picked it up since then. So I don't know.
Have you ever tried to connect a Roomba via Homebridge?
No.
I saw that plugin, but it was one of those like unverified plugins. When you install Homebridge on a Mac or whatever, and then you actually search for plugins, they show like some plugins are verified with like a green check mark, and some are just unverified random developers or whatever putting these plugins in the system. And it was an unverified plugin, and I was like, I don't know about doing that. So I didn't. But I was curious how a Roomba would work in Homebridge via HomeKit. So listeners, if any of you have done that with Homebridge, I'd be curious to know. But do you ever use the unverified plugins?
Yeah, I think I've used them in the past. I've definitely used them, but I'm also comfortable enough to go through and look at the code and kind of watch for anything that I feel would be suspicious. Maybe that's just like false confidence on my part that I'm totally going to be able to recognize something suspicious happening. But I usually go through, and it's for the most part, you know, it's not anything too crazy, and I'll kind of just get like, I would not know how to write those type of plugins and stuff. That's not the code that I write, but I feel like I can at least parse through it and understand what's going on. So I usually look through them just kind of for my own peace of mind. And I'll look for other people who've used them as well, just to see if they have any opinions on it, whether or not it is verified, because the Homebridge community is pretty tight.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who are responsive and stuff like that with helping you out, as well as kind of providing feedback on things. So I'll look around before kind of just jumping in. Like, I'm not going to just add a whole bunch of random plugins without doing any, you know, research right, or looking into them at all. But I've definitely used them.
All right. Well, now this is something that's also carried from week to week in our notes. But we had Hunter Douglas shades. These are HomeKit shades. Or do you ever call them Venetian blinds? Is that a northern thing?
I've heard of the term, but I've never used it.
I don't know. That's what we called them back in
the day. I don't know if that's a very specific type of blind / shade. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. But anyway, tell me about these Hunter Douglas shades.
Okay, so I was really excited about this. This is another addition to the studio. And I was really excited about it because on top of getting some really nice shades for the studio, I feel like I'm in a good spot to review these, which full review will be coming. But we also have them. We have the Lutron Serena shades in our living room. So we have a good comparison between the two brands in terms of setup, quality, appearance, everything like that. And before even getting too deep, I will say that both the Lutron Serena shades as well as the Hunter Douglas shades, the amount of customization you can do is incredible. It is really nice. These are absolutely, both of them, high-end premium products. Their looks, performance, everything has blown me away. I have literally no qualms with either of these two products. But they're also done completely differently. They're also, the two that I have are completely different styles. So the ones that I have upstairs, the Lutron Serena shades, is literally like a 7-foot window or something. It's massive. And we have like this modern fascia along the top, which houses a bunch of like D batteries or something in there. And it's been more than a year since I've had those installed. We installed those, and the batteries are still rocking. So I can vouch for the battery life over there. The Serena shade, or the Hunter Douglas shades, they are a honeycomb, like, I guess you call it a honeycomb, like they collapse up, if that makes sense. Like they stack into each other versus the Serena shades, which is a roller. I'm sure they have different types in both, but this is what we're looking at. So like honeycomb shades, they kind of like pull up on the Hunter Douglas side and a roller on the Lutron side. So Lutron, it's nice. You hit the button, it goes down, control it. You can ask Siri to go to a certain percentage, like open the window 20%, 25%, 70%, anything like that. Of course, with both of these, you can have them all controlled through HomeKit, not just with Siri, but with any automations you have. So when you arrive and leave, open the window. For me, I use my Goodnight Scene, which will do a bunch of stuff, including close the shades in the living room. Really nice to do. And I honestly prefer doing it through HomeKit instead of having it on a schedule, because I like having the windows open more often than not. And if I had them on a schedule, like, okay, every day at 9 p.m. it shuts the windows, sometimes I still want them open, even if just a little bit. Like maybe we'll close them to like 25%, so there's only like a quarter of the window open at the bottom, but I still like that option. So putting them completely on a schedule is not what I like, and I prefer using the scenes and automations, like when you come and go, to open and close, or around like your good morning and good night scene. So I use the good morning scene to open at 70% and the good night scene to close it when we finally do go to bed. So I like those kind of automations. Hunter Douglas does all those as well. What really sets the Hunter Douglas apart, and I know there's a proper term for this, I could Google it, I could give it a Goog if I really was that interested, but it is one of the ones where it can open from the bottom as well as from the top. Okay, so you got your shades, your normal window shades, and like they open from the bottom to reveal your window.
Right.
So now you imagine your window's closed, but now you can open them from the top. You can pull them down, so like the bottom half of your window is covered.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah. And you can do them at the same time. So you can literally like open the top 20% and the bottom 30% or something, and leave 50% of your middle, like the middle part of your window, covered.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. There are actually a lot of uses for this that I have found, and I love it. So one, kind of just dealing with the stupid sun face, is I like to have the sun coming in, but I also want to have I like having the light come in, but I also don't want to be staring at the sun. Like, I don't want the sun staring into my brain. And being able to, like, choose how much the window is open from the top and the bottom, I can literally kind of, like, block out where the sun is, but keep my window open at the same time. Now, there are adjustments there as the sun moves, as it's trying to get into my eyeball, but it does a good job of, small adjustments here and there to kind of compensate for that. So I really like that aspect.
You really have a vendetta against the sun.
Okay, we have a feud. And it is ongoing, okay?
Okay.
And strike one is, or my first assault is these shades that I can block it out with. Oh, they also have blackout versus like semi-transparent, or not like partially opaque. So like the ones that'll kind of allow some light through without like privacy ones, but aren't completely blacking out the light. So I went with the latter there, where I have some light coming through the shades, but and not completely blacking out. If this was in a bedroom or something like that, you'd probably want the blackout to completely keep it dark. So forgot to mention that too. But going back to this kind of dual control, it's just really, really cool the fact that you can kind of choose both of those. So other instances I found, I like being able to cover the bottom and leave the top open, because like when we have the dog, sometimes they'll keep like going to my window to try to say hi or something, and I can cover the bottom so they won't see me. But again, I still have light coming in through the top and I can like see the road out the window. So I like that as well. And then of course, just turn it the other way and open it like a normal shade and leave the top part, you know, partially covered or completely open, whatever you want to do. So I really like that. But what's interesting here is going into HomeKit. The way it shows in HomeKit is it has like shade one. This is just shade one.
Right.
And then there's like inside of shade one, there are two components. There's like shade one and there's shade one middle rail.
Huh.
Which is essentially when you open it from the top, it essentially becomes like a middle rail because you have the one on the bottom and then you have like the control box mounted to your sill. And then that extra part that drops from the top is like a middle rail. But it makes it weird. So like right now, this is so hard to describe, and I've been thinking about this as I'm working on the actual written review and stuff, but you have like two sliders in the home app. So like it normally seems pretty obvious. Like you open the shade, so it's got like the blue part and then the open part. So like the blue part is where the shade is, and then the open part is where like light is coming through. So if you open your window 75%, you have 25% of the top is blue and the other 75% below is open. It's like, well, that's what I've got right now. 25% of the window covered. And it's fine. But if you went to like open it from the top, you have to move that other half down as well. And it gets really confusing in your head.
Hmm.
Because you have to like slide it up. It's so
sounds complicated.
Because it's like backward. Because like, so I'm opening my left one, which is the bottom rail, 25%. So that bottom rail goes up 25% of the way. And if I wanted to go on the top, you know, lower the top down, I have to slide it up like 75% of the way or whatever, 25%, whatever it is. And it comes down from the top, but it's like inverse almost. Like it's, I guess not inverse. It's just weird because it's like backwards. So it's really confusing in your head when you're trying to do it through HomeKit of like, wait, if I want to open the top, what do I set that as? Like, is it 25% open or like it just... really, it's essentially the same. Like, just have to imagine like that right bar is just like upside down. And I don't know if there's like, maybe there's a spot in HomeKit. I don't see it in here of a way to like invert that. Like, I don't see that anywhere. I would be curious if that was like a thing.
Mm.
No, there's not a way to invert like that second rail, but it just makes it weird. So especially if you're saying like close the window or close the, you know, the studio shades, it'll, you know, close both of them and stuff like that. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to break them out. Instead of showing them as one tile, I'm going to separate them into two tiles. And then I'll just kind of go from there. So I'll say, like, open the studio shade, 30%, whatever. And it'll open it like normal. And then if I do want to get into that other one, I can do, like, open the top of the studio shade 10%. And then that top bar will come down, like, 10%. Something like that. But it gets a little weird. They do think through a lot of the fringe cases because I was a little bit worried. Like, what happens if I try to open both of them 80%? Which if you're imagining that in your head, your top bar is going, you know, the one from the bottom is going open 80%. And then the one on the top is trying to go down 80%. And they would like, you know, hit each other.
Right.
Luckily, that's not a thing. They automatically stop you. So if you try to go to a point where it would hit the other bar, it just doesn't allow you in HomeKit. So you're never going to just like screw up your window, anything like that. So they do protect against that. I was legitimately worried about testing it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope I don't break this, but this is the first thing that I want to try is what happens. So you are protected and it won't do anything like that. So I really, really like these things. They've been fantastic. They've been extremely responsive. A couple other things to mention along them. They do have a... So I'm using this newer system, which is like this battery wand, which is awesome. Huh. So it'll last, I think they said like maybe 6 months or so, depending on usage. And it just kind of slots in there. It's a big old like lithium ion battery, pops in and powers your blinds or your shades. And then you have a little charging stand, put it wherever you want, and you can have a second battery. Then when you just swap them out, the charging stand holds two batteries and you just like take the one out of your window, stick it in, take the other one out and put it right back in your window and boom, good to go. I like that a lot. And I like that more than the D batteries that I'm using in the Serena shades. Again, the Serena shades have lasted a crazy long time, especially for as large as they are. I mean, like 7 feet wide. So that's been great, but it's still something to consider. I kind of just like lithium batteries versus regular batteries, even though the battery life is shorter here on the Hunter Douglas shades. Other thing too, physical controls. The Serena shades, you can control those using Lutron's Pico remotes. They have one of those for the shades.
Oh.
Very nice. Very handy. It matches every other one of Lutron's Pico remotes, which anyone who has Lutron knows it gets a little bit annoying, the fact that all the remotes look identical. So if you're controlling your fan or your shades or your lights, they all look the same. So something to take into consider there. I find that annoying, and you need to, like, the labels on them are super tiny and they're not prominent enough. So I wish Lutron would do something to maybe make those a little more clear what they're controlling. But on the Hunter Douglas side, they have these little things that are, they're like stones, and they got these matte finishes. They fit really comfortably in your hand, and they're weird just in the fact that, like, they're literally kind of like this triangular stone, like pebbles almost. But they're, you know, good sized, and each of them has a little controller inside. So one is the scene controller, and you basically just hit a button on it. It boots it, the screen turns on the center, and you can choose from any of the scenes that you created. Now, this is a little less useful for one window shade, but if you have a bunch of multiple in a room, something like that, it could be really cool because you could set different scenes. Like if you have five windows all in a row, you could have like the middle one open 80%, the two next to it open 60%, and the other ones open a little bit less. So that way it's kind of like a cascading look, or if you just have like one scene opens your front windows and closes your back windows, or vice versa, anything like that. So you can alternate through your scenes. So the first one is your scene controller. Then your second one is your actual, just your regular control. Open, close, all of that. And you can even control the top and bottom bars. So if you want to open the top or open the bottom, all that is possible with this little controller. And it can program up to like six different shades or all of them at once. So I really like that as well. There's just times that you don't want to go through HomeKit. There's times you just don't want to invoke Siri. You just want to grab a control. And you, we've talked about this. You know I'm very much about the physical controls of your smart home devices and making sure that is always an option. And I know my wife and anyone else who would come over would be really annoyed if, like, oh, look at these fancy shades. You can't control them unless you know the phrase to use with Siri, or you have to go into the Home app or something like that. So physical controls are very important. And Hunter Douglas has some really, really cool ones. When I do get that review done and anyone checks it out, you'll be able to see what I'm talking about with these little pebbly controllers, because they're a really cool idea and I like them a lot. But yeah, so that's my main thing. If I had to, you know, pick again, going through another window, and I had to choose between the Serena shades and Hunter Douglas, I'm not sure if I'd be able to 100% do it. I feel like it'd have to depend on where the room was, which way it was situated, closer to the studio or not, and if it was, if I wanted the roller shade versus like these honeycomb ones, because these look really nice as well. And that would probably be my differentiator. I already had, since the Hunter Douglas one, the controller can, you know, control up to six shades here, that might be nice to be able to jump between them all versus having to buy an additional Pico remote for like the Lutron one. But it's kind of a minor differentiator. Hunter Douglas also has a jumper, so they have like your hub going on. The like Lutron has their bridge, like a SATA bridge. Hunter Douglas has their own bridge. There is a bridge for these guys too, and there is a jumper. So if I've got this down here in the studio, but I want to do something up in the living room and that's too far away, I can just plug this guy into the network and it'll boost like my signal for these guys up there. So they do take that into consideration as well. These are just very thought out. They're such a sleek setup here, and I've been really, really happy with them.
And what is the model Hunter Douglas shades that you have?
Oh, no idea. They don't. Okay. I'm not,
because I was
sure
on their website, yeah, trying to find what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, what are my options here? Read them to me.
You got Silhouette.
Okay.
Pirouette. Luminette. Duet. Vignette. Solera. Sonnet.
Oh gosh. Yeah. No. None of those I recognize. Like, a lot of them sound familiar, and I'm not sure which ones you would count. Okay. So let me look here. I'm looking with you here. What's different, I believe they sell theirs through like reps versus buying them through the website. So Lutron, with their Serena shades, you could buy, customize, do all your measurements and everything easily through their own website.
yeah,
and do the install as well. And I had no issues doing the install on those. But Hunter Douglas, they go through specialists and contractors and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of a different process. And I think you can do your own measurements, but they recommend for an additional fee having them do the measurements as well, just to make sure that you're, you know, covered that way. I'm trying to look and see which one. They just have like their top down, bottom up shades here, and I'm trying to see kind of which one it would be. And
no idea.
All motorized system. Yeah, no, it's not Duolite because I don't have two different. The Duolites are cool because it's like one side can be blackout and the other side can just be like the privacy, like let some light through. So two different materials, which is a really neat idea, but that is not the one that I've got here.
If we can find out what model it is, and I'll put that link in show notes so listeners can see it, because there are some varying types of the Hunter Douglas ones. But yeah, their website, it's like find a specialist or...
Oh, okay. I see them now. Okay. So those are just like the different window treatments. So those are just the different like fabric materials and stuff like that. So mine is probably like the duet or something like that. That looks pretty similar to what I've got going on.
Okay.
Like gotcha. The actual... Yeah. So I would go with duet is probably the treatment that I have.
Okay. Well, I'll put a link to the Hunter Douglas website in show notes, and you guys can check that out. But it does sound pretty cool. As I, you know, possibly build a new house pretty soon, I'm curious about using these, especially like the floor-to-ceiling, you know, kind of like big shades. But we'll see.
I use these so often, man. Like, we've used the ones in our living room. Obviously, like, through your window, we use them all the time. And I can really say that when it's a manual process, I never open the windows. I just never do it. And when it's, like, automated, like, with my Good Morning Scene and stuff like that, it makes it so much easier, as well as having the remote to do it. Like, I don't know what it is. It's not like it's a hard task to walk up to the window and just, like, lift your arm, but... It's just something that I find myself struggling to do, and it makes the house feel so much open and so much more open and full of light and everything. I love it. So I would recommend it. I would 100% do it again.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right, well, let's hit a couple listener questions. This actually is not a question, but Chris actually emailed us talking about his Natatmo weather station, and I believe I had mentioned that on the last episode or the time before that, but I'm curious about the weather station. I was very close to just pulling the trigger and getting one. But my question to you listeners, if you have one of these Natatmo weather stations, Andrew, you might know the answer to this too, but Chris actually has the old version and the new version of the Natatmo one. The new one is a home kit, but he says because it's a sensor, there's not really a tile for the weather station. It is one of the sensor icons that are at the top of the page in the home app. But what I really want to know is, if I get the Natatmo weather station, put it in HomeKit, and I can know the temperature that's literally right outside my house, if I ask one of my HomePods, you know, what's the weather like, is it going to pull from the Natatmo weather station info, or is it still just going to give me kind of the stock weather based on my location or city rather than like right outside my house? And I don't know the answer to that, but I'm curious because that's where a lot of the people in my house, namely my wife and myself, if we want to know the temperature outside, we're going to ask one of our HomePods. And I wanted to, if I got one of these Natatmo weather stations, I'd like for it to be the temperature and the weather that's literally right outside our house. So curious if that is actually how it works or not. Listeners, if you have one of these Natatmo weather stations, I would love to know if that's your experience or if it doesn't work that way. Be curious.
That is a good question. And I don't, when you say just what's the weather like? I don't believe it will use your weather station because it gives right. you more information. I think usually HomePod will be like, oh, it's 70 and sunny or something like that, which
right.
like the sunny or whatever, your weather station isn't necessarily going to tell you. So that's one thing. But here's what you can do. This is what I do, because you don't need a weather station fully to do this. You can get by with like an Eve degree, something like that. Like literally there's outdoor sensors already that you can get without the full weather station. If you didn't want to go the full weather station route,
yeah.
you can just get an Eve degree, put that outside, and that'll give you your temperature. But what you do, create your zones in HomeKit. Everyone out there, you better be creating your zones appropriately. Floors, joint rooms, indoor, outdoor, all of that. Create lots of zones. And then I will just ask for Siri and then just say, what's the weather outside?
Oh, okay.
Or something like that, and specify my zone. And then it'll give me the temperature reading from my sensor that is in that zone.
Okay. Well, I might try that. I do not have an Eve degree yet, but in my normal fashion, I might buy one before we're done recording. So there you go. This next question is from David on Twitter, and we had talked about what happens when a third-party app asks for your home data access as far as the privacy and security, and what do they actually get? Tim Berth last week actually helped address that question specifically, but David is now asking what happens when an app asks, quote, would like to find and connect to devices on your local network, and you have to say okay or don't allow. And Andrew can go into more detail, but basically, if you want that app to be able to find something like a Google Chromecast, or if that app has devices like the Eve app is what David actually sent in this tweet, but if the Eve app wants to be able to update the firmware on Eve devices, the app needs to be able to connect to the local network and get the update and push it to the devices. So you're not really opening a ton of stuff. It's not like this app has like deep access to your internet traffic or anything like that. But the app does need access to your local network so it can do things like firmware updates. Or again, if you're using something like Google Chromecast, it needs to be able to access those other devices on the network.
That is literally it. And it can be a weird thing to pop up at times because it makes sense with things like this. But like I've had it pop up, I'm pretty sure in like the Amazon app or something like that. And it's just weird. It's like, why is this shopping app asking for devices on my network? And it's because whether they're doing something like trying to play Chromecast to a device on your network, because Chromecast is different than AirPlay. AirPlay is automatically discovered. Don't have to do anything fancy. Chromecast, they actually have to be able to be watching on your network. So maybe the Amazon app has like the video stuff and it's trying to cast video to any applicable devices. Same thing with a bunch of other apps that'll ask for that access. And in case of HomeKit things, when there are Wi-Fi connected HomeKit devices, Eve has a few of them out there. The rest of them are Bluetooth or going to be Thread. They need to be able to access that local network. Otherwise, Apple just by default blocks that local network access. Like the app has, of course, access to the internet and everything else you would normally do, but it just kind of silos it off and doesn't allow access to local devices you have. So if you want to be able to do firmware updates on those apps, you do need to allow access to that local network.
That's right. Well, listeners, keep the questions coming. Tweet at us. Use the hashtag HomeKitInsider. We'd love to hear about your projects or whatever you got going on in the world of HomeKit. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts, or up to 10 and 20 stars, whatever you want to put in the title there. We greatly appreciate that. Don't forget to check out the Apple Insider Daily Podcast every morning. Get the top Apple headlines, and the Apple Insider Podcast comes out every Friday. Don't forget to check out that episode last week with Tim Berth from Eve. Had a lot of people say nice things about that episode on Twitter. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time.